Hello and welcome to the Honest Politics Podcast. My name is Alex Gamsik and I am the founder of Honest Politics, LLC. My company does political research, but not for politicians. My services are for everyday Americans just like you and me. So let's get started talking about this new terrorism, is how I frame it in my own mind. But before we discuss online terrorism and how it's formulated through the internet, I just wanted to say this podcast is not going to be so heavily edited. You know, I've got a lot going on in my personal life. I'm doing an accounting degree. I'm full-time working at another job and just a lot of things going on. You know, I've been enjoying life a lot more. I've recently gotten to a situation I've always wanted to be in. You know, I don't have tons of time to be doing this research, but I do still want to put out a podcast at least once a month. So this article was written by Samantha Walther and Andrew McCoy. They are both at the American Counterterrorism Targeting and Resilience Institute, and they've written this academic article. It's called U.S. Extremism on Telegram, Fueling Disinformation, Conspiracy Theories, and Accelerationism. And it was published in a journal called Perspectives on Terrorism. I got this from JSTOR, and let's dive into the article. It basically looked at alt-right media, focusing on that specifically through a Twitter wannabe called Telegram. So Telegram's a social media platform on the internet. It's not as mainstream or popular as Twitter and Facebook, but it's been kind of a refuge for people who are kicked off of Twitter due to content violations. For example, I once went to a congressional hearing on Capitol Hill about how ISIS recruits through Twitter and what to do about the ISIS Twitter accounts. And then there was a coordinated effort by the media companies and the US government to take down those accounts, which made the news. And basically, English-speaking ISIS vanished from Twitter because of that crackdown. But as the authors here say, it just kind of transitioned from Twitter to Telegram. And of course, how do you quantify, you know, the effort and the time taken to move to Telegram and how many users just gave up completely? So we don't know exactly what effect it might have had, but the authors here conclude that it basically just shifted. It didn't completely get rid of terrorism in that way. And you're probably going to hear the cats meowing in the background. That's what I mean by, like, my life is so perfect right now. I have everything I need. My cats are around me. Like, everything's great. So back to the horribleness that is terrorism and how it's brewing in America. So you might have noticed that homegrown terrorism, whether it's through mass murders using guns or it's riots in the cities burning down buildings, or it is attacking the legislature, literally invading this country's legislative body. You know, these things are becoming more dangerous than the terrorism of the 90s and early 2000s that you had with this radical Islamists or whatever you want to call them. So it's transitioned. And this research article written in 2021 is looking at these 2021 threats, mostly festering online. So as the article says, previous research showed that these online communities can form just as strong of connections as offline communities, and they build very strong echo chambers. A lot of people find strong community and fulfillment through online communities, which are, quote, formed and strengthened through shared opinions, creating a collective identity that is often strengthened in the face of intergroup conflict. So by pitting us versus them, by pitting our group versus their group, this identity versus that identity, it strengthens one's own sense of belonging to a particular group. The research currently is thin on how far-right activists are radicalized, but most research into extremism shows that the internet may be the biggest factor in radicalizing somebody. They also went on to say that extremism is not the norm, especially in American politics. It says both far-right and far-left extremists are similar to one another in that they hold simplistic black-and-white perceptions of the world, are overconfident in their judgments, and are less tolerant of out-group opinions. So I included this quote because I think it's extremely important to understand that both the far right and far left extremists are similar in a way in that, you know, it's either I'm completely right or they're completely wrong. The world is so simple, you can break it down into, you know, it's all because one thing is happening, one person's controlling everything, or it's all because, you know, God said this, or it's, you know, the wealthy are all ganging up together to take us down or something. And the more simple the explanation, sometimes the more unrealistic it is. I know it's interesting, right? Because it kind of goes against Occam's razor that says the simplest answer is often the most truthful. But you also have to think, like, is a cabal of really rich people controlling the world the simplest answer when you look at rich people and how they compete and fight with each other all the time? You know, it's not like they're all buddy-buddy get along, and it's really hard to imagine one person or one group is secretly controlling the world. It's so stupid. So the simpler the explanation for a really complex problem, you know, is probably not true. It's probably just an extremist opinion. So the article went on to say that the right thinks that mainstream discriminates against them. So the far left feel okay on mainstream sites and offline, while the right are pushed to alternate platforms. So you'll see a lot of radical leftists on Twitter, and they feel more welcome there, protesting and live in person. But conservatives, and I've seen this, you know, in my personal life too, conservatives are often kind of whispering to themselves. They're in their own corner of the internet, kind of away from everyone else, because, you know, they know that their opinions are not, quote, popular. Research shows far right uses conspiracy theories more than the far left, and often their conspiracies are developed after major events to help people better understand the unpredictability of these events. Like I said, after the Sandy Hook massacre, you can't even imagine that kind of horror. So you just say it's fake. You just, you know, people like Alex Jones are just making up BS because it's so hard to understand why someone would do this. Just make a simple explanation. Just say, you know, someone, it's all fake, don't worry about it. You know, that's all BS. And then the term accelerationism was kind of a Marxist fringe view that capitalism would eventually collapse on its own intensification. Like, capitalism at its extreme endpoint just collapses in on itself. So extremists think that they can accelerate violence and chaos to collapse the entire system and create a world that fits their either white supremacist view or communist socialist view or fascist view or whatever they want to do. So it's interesting, right? They took this Marxist idea of accelerationism to end capitalism, and they think they can use it to take down the entire United States government and Western democracy and all this. And just magically their ideology will take over, you know. Like, you know, if I just sit everybody down in a room and explain to them, then obviously they'll come to their senses. No, that's not how the world works, guys. People are stuck in their own views. So even if you did collapse the system, it would probably just fester on itself and create more chaos and sadness and horror than your perfect world springing up. That's not how the world works. So there are far fewer of the far-left activists, but the authors concluded that the far-leftists were just on a different platform. So there was a lot of cybercrimes and financial scams on these posts, and they concluded it was because the channels were not as public-facing. You know, on Twitter, it's harder to get away with that stuff because it's public and it'll get taken down by the Twitter moderators. Here on Telegram, it's not as public, so those kind of things can be gotten away with. There's this weird thing called the Pine Tree Party. It's like an eco-fascism that wants to lower the human population through a revolution, and it's also strangely anti-immigrant and pro-white, and it's just, you can look up Pine Tree Party if you want. It's kind of weird and strange. But they talked about it in this article. The largest source of misinformation that they saw on Telegram was about the COVID-19 pandemic. And I think that just makes sense given that, like they said earlier, these extremists use major events and try to make them simplistic because they can't really interpret the complexities associated with it. There was a large intersection with QAnon, radical rightism, that doesn't just reject science, but comes up with their own scientific rhetoric to provide an alternate interpretation, even though none really exists. So, you know, they'll counter science with, like, pseudoscience or what I call bro science. You know, they try to make up things about how the human body works and stuff, even though they're not doctors. Or they'll give anecdotal evidence about, oh, my Aunt Betty said, blah, 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 you know. Just because this happened to your Uncle John doesn't mean it's the right thing for the entire population of America, but you do you and pretend you're a scientist. So these people glorify violence and see mass murderers and white supremacists as saints. That's often a thing they'll call them. These authors say that, you know, the authors of the study say deplatforming, so getting rid of their accounts, doesn't solve the problem, it just shifts it somewhere else. So maybe they say greater tolerance and inclusivity within mainstream dialogue is the right way to go. You know, like, maybe just let these extremists be in public, be on Twitter, so we know where they are and we can call them out and we can refute their arguments. The problem is, in my opinion, that has happened. Like, Reddit and Twitter and Facebook don't tolerate outright lies and extremism. And these people are getting downvoted and, you know, replied to into oblivion. And that's why they're leaving, partially. Not just because they're getting their accounts banned. It's because they don't have as big a platform. And when they're on Telegram or some alternate method, they feel better about themselves because they're surrounded by people like them. And apparently people trying to scam them out of money because they'll believe anything. So what the authors recommend is a hybrid between automated and human detection of extreme content. Now, I know this is already happening. Like, Facebook will recognize certain words and flag it, and then a human will review it. Apparently having that job is horrible because you have to look at all kinds of stuff that needs content moderating. You can just imagine what's on Facebook that needs to be content moderated, but... The authors did say that the ISIS Twitter takedown was highly effective, but Telegram just became their new home. And preventative measures, you know, to stop extremism or moving to alternate platforms in the first place, or just refuting these ideas in general, is the best way to go. So, you know, it would be great if our society took misinformation and made it more of a priority and found a way to spread truth and have, like, a not like a ministry of truth, but like a singular platform that people trusted just with straight news. I recently saw that PBS is a good resource. And, you know, I've suggested this in the past. I know it's harder to do, but, you know, check CNN and Fox News and NPR and a bunch of other outlets and compare them. See where similarities exist. Try to recognize their biases and kind of interpret. I know that's difficult. Not everyone has time for that. I was in a conversation with somebody, and one person said, you know, why don't you check multiple news outlets to see what's going on? And then the other person said, yeah, but then I wouldn't know who to believe. I'll just watch one platform. So most people don't have the time or the emotional investment, or the critical analytical skills. Oh, and believe me, there's a lot of people in this country who don't have critical or analytical skills. And even if they do, they need to focus when they apply it. If they're listening to the radio on the way to work, they're not critically analyzing everything they hear. So, just some stuff to keep in mind. I hope you really enjoyed this episode. I mean, we're talking about extremism and horrible stuff, so maybe not really enjoyed it, but hopefully it informed you a little bit on the online extremism and how it's going on, and maybe it gave you some ideas for how to fix it. I'd love to hear it at honestpoliticsllc@gmail.com. I'm also going to, you know, help people research how to vote in the upcoming election. I'm not telling you who to vote for. What I'm doing is giving you information on all of the candidates, and you can make your decisions from there. So if you're interested, just let me know. And I hope to talk to you next time as we seek to discover more of the stories behind the statistics.